All the Rage with John Bowd on www.trexfm.org.
Hello, listeners. Welcome again to All the Rage. Thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And as ever, in these troubling times, we always like to send love and solidarity to you in this terrible period. And I know that doesn't really amount to much, but, you know, it's from the heart. I'm very pleased to say that on this week's show, I have another guest, which I'm always delighted to do. And I'm going to hand over to my guest to introduce themselves now. So please do introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. My name's Rachel Diamond. And I started a charity which is called My Yard back in 2014, after spending most of my life traveling the world and doing sort of charity-based work and just being a bit of a traveler. I came back, I've worked in publishing, but it just made sense to start a charity back then.
Oh, good stuff. Okay, so welcome to the show. Please tell us all about My Yard. What is it? What do you do? What's it all about?
So basically, back in 2014, I've been helping a lot of people just and not really enjoying my work very much. And I got an offer from Neighbourly. Would I like to rescue surplus food from Marks and Spencer's and other places? And I thought, you know, it would be a really nice thing to do, to sort of rescue nice food and share it with sort of people that I knew who might be struggling a little bit. I had a lot of friends who were struggling, single mums at the time. I was a mum at the time. Well, I still am, but yeah. I was a new mum at the time then.
Yeah.
And so I basically just started dabbling with rescuing surplus food, registered a charity, and all with the intent of, I don't know, trying to stop isolation. When you go through a hard time, or when I've been through a hard time, should I say, I never really reach out for help. Mm. And I remember sitting one day and thinking, you know, I'm sure I could do more than I'm doing with my life, but I don't know what to say or where to go. And so basically My Yard came from there. A sort of charity to just reach out to people who are just going through a real period of crisis or isolation and not feeling quite in touch with the world for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Not just poverty, it could have been a sudden accident, mental health, you know, anything really, moving to a new place. And so it just went from there. I started rescuing food, giving it out, doing community meals where everyone was welcome. One of the reasons as well was when you go through a difficult time, it's often hard to, I don't know, cook for yourself and eat the right things and, I don't know, be healthy, you know, get out of the house and, I don't know, exercise and stuff like that. So it was, the community meals were very much based upon healthy food and at the end having lots of surplus fruits and vegetables that everyone could take home with them after a meal. So from there, I got approached by, I think it was the Young Harrow Foundation, to have a meeting about food poverty down in South Harrow on Grange Farm Estate. And as a result of that, My Yard started doing weekly surplus markets down there and holiday food, so anyone could drop in and just grab some fruits and sandwiches or whatever. And from there, it sort of led on to a lot more community building within a specific area and getting to know the residents of the estate, especially the young people. And it was always over food. You know, we'd cook together, we'd share food, we'd distribute food to other people from there. It wasn't always just about the need of the residents on the estate. It became bigger. We started sort of putting on events and just inviting people and sharing food. So the food was the beginning, the surplus food, but the sort of result has been very much building, you know, working with communities to build their own community using the food as a tool. The thing I'd really say is also when I went through a difficult time, I brought up my children on my own and sort of had a few my own journeys to go along. And what I always really, really appreciated was sort of a friend of mine once sent me an Able and Cole box. Another friend turned up and, you know, gave me a beautiful gift, some jacket or something, and whizzed me out for a nice meal. And it's the experience of respecting each other at the time of need. And obviously when you're on a, if it is poverty and you're on a budget, your only experience is really going into the supermarket and really struggling to buy what you really want and always, you know, just thinking about it and worrying. And so part of the, or literally the ethos is very much about abundance and respect and the feeling of when you come to my yard, you should feel it's a treat, it's an amazing experience, and you're going to get exactly what you would get yourself. No one's going to try and give you something, you know, because that's what you deserve or that's what we think you should have. It's really trying to work with whoever comes along and the way they live their life and just lifting each other up. And honestly, everyone who comes along to the community centre who I've ever met lifts me up as much as me or anyone sort of volunteering for my yard has could claim to have helped. I think we've been helped and learned. So it's all about, you know, respect and working together. And, you know, some people might not have food or money, but they're there for each other. They have each other. They have, I don't know, culture, friendships. They have other things. That's literally the heart of my yard, not to become kind of system or I don't know, one size fits all. It's definitely not that.
I'm really interested in the basis of community that you, as you say, in what you do. Do you think that a kind of sense of community naturally grows from what you're doing, or when this project began, was that kind of the idea of, did you have it in your mind, like, I absolutely want to build or strengthen communities among people that perhaps are suffering without access to them?
It kind of, I'm not someone who goes into things with a plan. Yeah. I kind of do it and look back.
I know the feeling. Yeah.
So it definitely, I couldn't say that anything was planned, but you know, I love people and people are my life. So I think it was a kind of natural thing. And I think it's natural. I think when people come together in a good way for a sort of joined up good, so to speak, community just naturally happens. Mm. And, you know, it's not without its, you know, issues here and there, but yeah, it sort of snowballs because we have lots of different projects. My yard, when someone says, what does my yard do? And I'm like, well, which part? We've got all these, you know, we've got allotments, we've got sort of street art we've done, we've got loads of stuff. We've got sort of, one of my favourite things at the moment is a little surplus group when I have lots of leftover, I don't know, in the summer you get a lot of berries left over or tomatoes. Mm. At the end of the day, because you can only give so much of one thing to, you know, people. So we started a little surplus group to just rescue bulk leftover things that were going off and make jam or chutney or things like that. Right. And that little group was just literally to do that. But then they grew into another little community of people. And now they've started all helping each other and looking out for their neighbours and coming and collecting bags of food for their neighbours and starting projects. So it's sort of every time you do something, yeah, it just creates communities and groups who people want to be happy together, I think.
I was actually just going to say in passing, around about 130 shows ago, Dave said to me, would you like to do a radio show? I said, yeah, all right. And that's about the level of planning we had. So you're in good company with the non-planners. Yeah. Non-planners of the world unite around yes. Around all the rage. When you have the kind of community meals, is that like you all kind of, I mean, obviously we're in the time of COVID, so this is restricted now, but would you kind of gather together and cook in this one place together?
Yeah, we had a few different things. Another thing about my yard is we don't have a venue right now. We don't really have a base. We use the community centre on Grange Farm. When it's not COVID, it's shut right now because it's very small. But I've always been of the feeling I don't, you know, you rescue surplus food because there's so much surplus food. And to be honest, there's so many surplus places. I don't want to be taking up a space when there's loads of spaces you can use here and there and you don't always need a space. So that's relevant to how we cook because sometimes we use places where we could have a lot of people come together and cook and chop things up and just figure out what they were going to make on the day. And other places we had to sort of do it differently just because of the venue. But it was always inclusive. If people couldn't cook, they'd often bring things every, and we'd do it as a sit down meal as often as possible. So people would serve out. So, you know, you'd sit down and be brought your plate and people would be involved in washing up. And, you know, it really was a nice way people could, I don't know, sit down and chat. And another thing, when we did the meals, we always used to have a separate area for healing. So I'd always invite people along who enjoyed, I don't know, healing, you know, a bit of reflexology or, I don't know, different healings. Just to, you know, so it was a bit of a pamper time for either giving or receiving. And it was always completely free, and we didn't collect any donations. There was never any donation buckets. There was never any talk of money or anything like that, because I didn't want anyone to feel uncomfortable. So it was absolutely moneyless, to the dismay of some people.
Yes, you do. You always meet a bit of that, don't you, when you're trying to.
But I just wanted everyone to feel empowered and, you know, in the same boat at that meal, so that I didn't want to have any money there.
Yeah, yeah. Could you just tell us a little bit about Grange Farm? Because you say you're just like a kind of, I suppose, description about the geographical area. You know, what exactly is it there? Do you use it as a storeroom for the food? Do you do other things, et cetera?
Well, about, I think it was nearly 2 years ago, basically Grange Farm Estate is in South Harrow. It's being regenerated, so it's currently, they've knocked down the first sort of, they're doing it in four parts, in four stages. They've knocked down the first stage.
Right.
And there was a lot of delays, I think. I say, don't quote me, but I'm on radio, but I think there was a lot of delays in, you know, the agreements for, you know, knocking down all the flats and rebuilding them and selling some of them, whatever they do. So in the process, they emptied a lot of the buildings out, the residents there, the permanent residents moved to somewhere else because obviously they were going to be knocked down. And a lot of people in emergency accommodation were moved into these flats. So it's kind of a unique at the moment, because it's the flats are ready to be regenerated, as in they're not in the, you know, they're prefab. They weren't built forever.
Right,
so right. We've currently got, I think it's about 160 temporary residents out of about 230-ish households on that estate. So there's a high number of people living in what's called emergency or temporary accommodation, which means you'd have a family using a living room as a bedroom, because that's the way it goes when it's temporary. So it's a high number of people who have been through some kind of crisis to be in that situation and are most likely still, you know, struggling somewhat. And it's a very small, compact area. So that's the sort of situation there. And it's a kind of, the way it's shaped, there's a playground within the estate and there's a very small community building, which at capacity pre-COVID, I think they said sort of about 30 people should fit in there, and we've got a kind of little garden area as well.
So a couple of practical questions. So you save food from destruction, as it were, from
throwing
away. So where do you get the food from, or I mean generally speaking, or if there are any specifics that sort of come up as well, like, does someone ever contact you and go, hey, we've got some food that you could do with you?
Yeah, well, it started, like I said, it started back in 2014, and then it was very much, it was still fairly new. It wasn't new, but it was just becoming kind of more mainstream. I mean, I know someone who's been doing it for 20 years, but it wasn't like it is now. So back then it was mostly, at the end of the day, we'd go to Marks and Spencer's and get whatever they'd be throwing away, Tesco's, Waitrose. And that Waitrose came later. And at the time, I was new to it, and we'd get loads and loads of bakery items, croissants and, you know, bread, cakes, things like that. And the same from the other supermarkets. You'd get just a lot of bread and sort of, I don't know, fairly unhealthy items. Mm-hmm. So after about, because I'm quite a believer in eating well, and I don't really think pastries are ideal to eat a lot of, So I started seeking out ways to rescue as much fruit and vegetables and focus on that as possible. And also tofu, you know, chilled things, which were more healthy. And I just sort of tried to find sources for that. And I ended up working with an organization who are absolutely incredible, called City Harvest. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I haven't actually, but carry
they're
on.
They're kind of, they're sort of a hub, I'd say. They rescue from the same places, but in bulk, and they have a warehouse. So they have a warehouse in Acton, which is massive. And they rescue from restaurants, markets, supermarkets, Amazon, everywhere, and they take it all there and then they sort it out and they share it with charities in London. They started just on an estate as well, just with vans, and now they've worked up, they're quite big now. But what's really unique and special about them is you've probably heard of the Felix Project. So they're very similar, but one thing about City Harvest is they kind of really know every organization's ethos, and they try and give you match the surplus food that you want for your, you know, what you do. So for quite a long time now, they've really supported me with, because I noticed a lot of people who sort of were vegan or vegetarian would struggle to get the help they need in, you know, during a difficult time.
Yeah.
And also healthy food. So they really, really send me, or I pick up, excellent quality fruits, vegetables, and just, you know, thing, healthy stuff. So that's one of my main places. And then I go to sort of markets and shops or whatever, but I'm a bit of a seeker of, yeah, you know, nuts, dried fruits, anything. You can find it if you look hard enough. And I tend to veer away from the pastries and the sweets and all the stuff that you get loads and loads of.
Aside from food, you also do a few other things. I noticed on your website it talks about dance classes, coffee mornings. You've already mentioned some stuff about like healing for people. Could you kind of tell us a bit about that and why that came up? Was that part of your original idea to have a slightly more holistic approach, I suppose, or did just someone come along and go, oh, I can do some dance classes, you know, is that kind of thing?
I love creativity and I love sort of facilitating it. And I always just think if you bring people together, food is literally just a tool to connect people. You know, if you and me were sitting in front of each other with nothing, the conversation wouldn't flow as well as if we had, I don't know, coffee or, you know, some food or something. You know, it's like over dinner, everyone just starts relaxing and talking over food. So the food was always just making sure people had enough of the right foods for them and felt good about how they got them. And then just, it would lead to what it would lead to. And working with young people, they're really creative, a lot of them. And they really, you know, it was just a very, very natural thing to sort of move into. We do dance. We have, we've sort of got a mobile studio. So we do a bit of recording sometimes. And just all kinds. On Grange Farm Estate, we've got, loads of boards. We've done a lot of street art that the kids have sort of done themselves. Hope to do a lot more as well. And it's just literally the next stage of when you're sitting there chatting. It's like, well, what do you like to do? I like to draw. I like to do this or that. And obviously the things like dance, we've done yoga. Lately we've done a lot of rugby and basketball. It just kind of leads on and it makes you feel good. It makes the feedback's been, everyone just enjoys having something to do together as well as eat.
If you pardon the pun, it's not intentional, but it does seem quite organic in the way that, as you say, you've got together for food and then people have sort of gone, oh, you know, what else are you into? I really like that when that kind of thing just kind of grows. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, and I know. I remember now, actually, one of the second meal we did, this is quite a while ago now, the second meal we did, actually, I had a random phone call from a girl called Sarah. And she said, hello, I'm Sarah. I dance. And I was like, okay. And she says, I don't know. She said, I just thought I'd call you. Anyway, I still work with her to this day. She's an artist and a dancer. And she started her own sort of community group called Inspiral Arts. And so after that phone call, I said, well, why don't you come along to the meal with, you know, some of your friends or, you know, whatever, and perform for everyone. And but then as she was arranging it and I was mentioning it to people, they were like, oh, I'd love to sing too, or I'd love to do that. So I think the next meal we had this massive showcase of people dancing and singing, and that was all arranged by her. And then they just started coming down to the community center, and people just used to come down and do stuff. So yeah, it was organic and random a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's the best kind. It's the best way to do things, I think. It's just it's a totally natural growth, you know what I mean? You can't really attach well, again, coming back to plans, you know, sometimes it's good to plan, but other times you can't really attach your plan to something. It just starts, you know. It's like I have the kind of interesting ideas, I think, about when you find something, when you find a culture or a music or something you're into. I'm always interested in the way that you could have just not done, you could have just bypassed that. You could have just walked past it, you know, and then one day you went, oh, I'm going to go in here and check this out. And,
you know, I have ADHD, which it's basically a certain kind of way that my brain works anyway, is it's really easy to jump into rabbit holes, you know, 50 Google tabs open, you know, someone mentions, like last week I got a phone call about bees and I was like, yeah, I definitely need bees for the allotment. So kind of having that kind of brain and a charity can work really well as long as you're sort of surrounded by the right people and you know where, you know, I know where to draw lines. It's not that random, but it's kind of, I don't really fear going down whatever direction people want to go. Cause a lot of the people, especially down on Grange Farm, haven't always had the best experience with, I don't know, authorities, schools, systems, things like that. There's a lot of failings in systems for a lot of people. And, obviously, a lot of other people have different kinds of brains and how they work. And so I think, you know, if you're going into a community, to allow the it's very much to allow the community to lead where they want it to go. You know, it's not my choice to go in and say, hello, everyone, we're going to do dance classes. It's more just bringing people together and seeing what happens and letting everyone go in their little rabbit holes and, you know, make it happy and fun. And it all just starts with the food, to be honest.
Yeah, I've got more to ask you, but that's almost like a beautiful conclusion. Maybe we'll come back and repeat that a bit later. I very much feel that is the way that you. I often say to my nephews, for instance, it's just like, go try this thing over here. If it's crap, you don't have to do it twice. You know, it's not, you know, at least you've got something out of it because you gave something a spin and then you know. So on the website, I notice there's some talk about involvement with the food bank system too. How are you involved with that? In what ways?
It's a constant. It's honestly a constant journey for someone. It's really a constant journey trying to figure out the best model. And my yard definitely aren't alone in that sort of journey of trial and error. There's a lot to say on it. And it's a difficult thing to talk about because a lot, you know, I spend my time on this. So to people who either haven't used food banks or don't work within, you know, food, it's quite a difficult concept. It's not difficult, I'm not saying it like that, but it's complex. But I mean, where we're at right now with my yard is, especially in Harrow, there's a system called Help Harrow, which during COVID, anyone is entitled to get sort of an emergency packet of food, which is mostly tins and some, I think they get some potatoes and onions and, you know, whatever few fresh items there are. But it's a very basic, it's an emergency pack, but it will sustain and feed anyone, you know, for the period of time that it's sent for. And then there's other food banks which offer sort of similar models of essential foods. My yard's never really been part of giving just what is assumed as food bank items, because the people who are receiving it probably have their own choice of what they want to eat and drink and how they want to live their life, whether they want to cook, whether they don't want to cook. What they would do if they had money is very different from what comes in a standard packet of food that a food bank would give, if that makes sense. I've had a lot of arguments and justifications and stuff like that, because obviously when you give out much more than that, people are questioning, well, how do you know they really deserve it? And they're coming back again, and do you ask for vouchers? And it just goes against everything that sort of Maillard stands for, of respect and integrity and love and good vibes and all of those sorts of things, and trying to lift people up, to ask people to justify why they need literally essentials that they probably don't even want, if you know what I mean. So we've gone pre-COVID, we've done a lot of surplus food markets, which I think there's other ones happening in Harrow and everywhere else, where you just sort of load loads of surplus food on the table and people give either a pay as you feel donation, or sometimes, you know, you make a standard donation just because that changes it from being charity. You know, it makes people feel better, really, to be able to give a donation towards what they get, so they don't feel awkward coming to get it. So that's a model we have used. I'm really exploring what's going on in Hackney and Camden and sort of other places right now, which they're moving more towards a sort of surplus food combined with a cooperative feel, where we get a lot of surplus food, but then we would collect a standard donation each week from people, and we would purchase all the items, you know, like fresh fruits and vegetables that we probably wouldn't get, surplus rice, olive oil, things that are pretty necessary, and we could get in bulk. And obviously, especially after all this COVID stuff's over, use reusable containers, so it's much less waste. And, you know, just that kind of model is definitely the direction that we're going in. We do get sort of referrals from a lot of other organizations. You know, someone's got absolutely no funds, and we make up sort of nice packages for them based on a conversation with them and what they like to eat and what cooking facilities they have, and just try and really understand on an individual basis exactly what's needed. So yes, but I would refer people to a food bank, which there are a lot of at the moment, if they really just needed basic things, because we're not big enough to feed every single person for nothing. But the people that we do, it's just really relationship building and trying to understand how to best serve everyone that comes our way. You know, give the right food, make sure that conversation with every single person is, would you eat that? Because there's no point putting that in a bag if you wouldn't eat it.
Yeah.
And cap the size of what they get. You know, a couple of bags is a good amount, a good, you know, two full bags. But think about what goes in it, what's most useful. And, you know, if you've only got a microwave, what's the point in giving you things that you need to cook? Better, you know, let's look for some ready meals and packets and, you know, dried fruit and nuts and some snacks. You know, just really understanding exactly who the food's going to and what their facilities are. Because we've got one of my hubs, lady called Muller, looks after, and she said, you know, it was only after some time she realized that one of the homeless ladies has diabetes. Mm. And it really and never complained when given sort of pastries and bread and things, but it was just making her health awful, like a lot worse. Trying to start the conversation with everyone about food rather than, so I don't really call it a food bank. It's something I'm passionate about. Everyone who receives food should have a choice and an input into what they're receiving. And no two people's shopping basket is going to look the same. So I don't see why, when you get food for free or cheaply or from a charity, it should look like the next person's. It's just, it doesn't work like that in my head.
I greatly admire any work that you do, or anyone does, that seeks to actually put some level of choice and dignity back into a person's life if they have had that stripped from them by systematic means, like you say, perhaps school or authority or the benefit system.
And I'm on the same page. And I guess at working, or, you know, doing what I do, what I've realized as well, that I'm equally passionate about is not necessarily trying to put someone back in the system or in a box. That's their direction is literally just being there to help them find who they are and regrow who they are before there's any talk of, you know, it's all too easy to say, oh, we'll help you and signpost you to this organization because you're this or you're that. But people often aren't. They just are a human being who just needs a little bit of choice and freedom back into their life and to be accepted just for them right there and then, and not categorized in any way. On the same note, it's quite funny, as a small charity and choosing strongly to not have a base and work in a kind of nomadic way. We don't generally get the same level. I'll be perfectly honest, you don't get the sort of same level of volunteers, respect, known, whatever, because you don't have a base. If we had a beautiful building, which was the Maya building, attitudes would be very different. And part of keeping the Maillard ethos is to try and keep humble enough to remember that when someone is homeless or doesn't have anything, and I say homeless, we know about homeless people on the street, but these children that have grown up homeless, basically being moved from place to place to place, never really putting down roots and having a room of their own, or, you know, you can't, if you know you're going to be moved in 6 months, it's not really a home, if you know what I mean. And so we kind of stand with them at the moment in that kind of way. If that makes sense, might not.
No, that makes perfect sense. I completely agree. I feel like naturally when I'm on the radio, the words don't always come to me. But from a conversational perspective, I completely understand what you're saying. I could probably add a few more points, but you know. Listeners don't need to hear that, so I'll keep mine to myself. I just wanted to say, though, on that front, is that are you willing to have any connection to kind of wider social services? If someone showed up and said, I could do some mental health stuff, but I don't really know how to access that system.
Oh, we do a lot of signposting. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we do a lot of signposting to some amazing, I mean, we work hand in hand with a lot of organizations, sort of Mind in Harrow, brilliant. We work a lot with them with their outreach. My mind's gone blank, but we work with Ignite, with Christchurch down in Roxeth. There's another charity that looks after people involved in gang activity. VIP, I've just put together some sort of food for them, and you know, there's a lot of support out there, so it's not about not. Signpost, you know, we really want to sort of, and we also spend a lot of time with the council, especially the housing department, trying to help people with various issues. But when I say sort of about not categorizing, I just mean not saying your problem's solved if I direct you there.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
It's just understanding that the problem might not be solved by that. That's all it really is. It's kind of allowing people to just really identify what the problems are, because what might look like a mental health problem could actually be a housing problem, or could be, you know, an issue with, you know, and we've got children, you know, who get excluded, which isn't necessarily a bad behavior or a this problem. It could be linked to undiagnosed sort of difficulties and things like that. So it's just being open and being there as well. One really nice project that I'm really excited about is we're actually working with I've got two projects for my yard at the moment. One is linked to public health and England Sport England or something, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's to get some get people outdoors, community champions, and sort of, you know, work with some small groups of outdoor activities, which isn't going to cure mental health or anything in the material world, but it's given us a bit of leeway to do some more work, more individually, and get to know people. And obviously when you're doing physical things, sort of exercise or dance or gardening on the allotment, just get those conversations going and understand what's going on. So that's really exciting. And the other is the NHS. Because we have an allotment, and we've built a shack in the allotment, which is a covered shack, and it's quite big. It's just basically a like a Jamaican shack.
Okay.
And with a base, and so we can sort of, even in bad weather, because it's waterproof, do I don't know, we can do art, we can do yoga, but we can also, because even when people are referred, especially younger people, and especially for certain kinds of mental health issues, there's an absolute lack of resources, as you know.
Yeah.
And so the idea is people can come to the allotment in groups of, it's in groups of three or four, and do a little bit of gardening. We've just got sort of raised beds and, you know, nothing too difficult unless it needs to be. But then to also have someone who specializes in whatever the issue could be there under the shack. So it's not going to be as good as having a fully blown, you know, 1 hour session, one-to-one funded by the NHS, but we're hoping to bring in some really good experts or therapists. I don't know what you call them, to just bridge that gap of waiting lists and ongoing really difficult issues people are facing. You know, it's something hopefully my yard can develop. And as it develops, we might get more volunteer practitioners or whatever. So, yeah, which is always a bit difficult. But anyway, that's...
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good to know. And also, we'll definitely... I've already cut and pasted all your links and sent them to Dave. So we'll include that in the show description. So you will get some... hopefully, we'll get some traffic from this. Although our listener base is a bit haphazard, it's literally all over the world. I have no idea where people are listening from. And sometimes Dave comes back to me, sort of great. He goes, "You did very well in North America this week, and quite well in Venezuela last week." Oh, okay, interesting. He got a lot of listeners from Indonesia about 2 weeks ago. I was like, okay, interesting. But anyway, yeah, we'll include that. Just on the volunteering front. What does volunteering with My Yard look like during the times of coronavirus?
It's looking good. We've kind of got, we're always sort of encouraging volunteers. We have a lot of people who want sort of deliveries of food. So we're always short of delivery, you know, people driving food around.
Okay.
And, you know, but we sort of have people who pop in. It's very... I'd say we seek the kind of volunteers who actually want to do something rather than need a lot of direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's a bit harder to recruit volunteers because as a small, very small charity with a lot of different things going on, it's much more, I guess, when people come along, it's easier if they're, you know, if they're a leader or a self-starter. And we've had some brilliant people come in and really make a difference in the allotments, and also done a lot of sort of artwork and offering courses and things like that, Zoom courses and things. Mm. So, but in terms of sort of, we don't have a centre where we, you know, facilitate like 20 volunteers who turn up at this time in the morning and, you know, do this or that. It's very individually led, the volunteering. But it's going well, and we've had some lovely people sort of join us and stay with us, and we're always looking for more.
So is your volunteering like, is there something going on every day, or do you kind of say like, you've got a shout out and go, Tuesday afternoon is the next shift or something like that?
Well, we've sort of got Tuesdays, Fridays and Sundays are our food days.
Okay.
And then around that, we sort of need people to pack food and, you know, do things with food sometimes. And then we've got three allotments. So any volunteers who enjoy being outdoors and gardening, is any day they want to do that.
Oh, cool.
There's plenty to do in that area.
Yeah.
And then there's other stuff. We do little projects. We did a project last week of we created these 20 bags filled with, you know, how everyone's giving out food and stuff. And I was thinking about my granny and how she would have hated it. She's not with us anymore. If she couldn't have seen anyone, you know, if she'd have been stuck in their care home without being able to go out, she would have just, I mean, she was bad anyway. She was blind, and you'd find her just escaping and walking up the road all the time. And I thought of her. And so we did this, package of love. We had one lady who's been shielding. She made like surplus jams for us and wrote little notes to everyone. We had some children with, you know, how they like painting stones.
Yeah.
We got painted stones, and then the children wrote letters of why they painted the stone and who they were. a couple of chefs made dishes to include in it, some cakes. We had some crafters make, you know, do little poems and write things. So it was basically just like, you know, like, I don't know, a Christmas stocking or something, you know, with lots of interaction in it. So that was something we had a lot of volunteers, just volunteers to do bits and pieces for that and then deliver them to various people. So little projects like that are ongoing and kind of fun to do. So we have people volunteer for that.
Earlier in your intro, you talked about doing a lot of traveling many years ago, and which is always interesting to me anyway. I was wondering, was there any particular places of interest you traveled to that you feel like maybe inspired you to be doing My Yard or anything similar? Did you get that from traveling, or is that just something you had anyway?
I probably had it anyway to some extent, but yeah, I mean, I left when I was 17 and I went to Australia, America, and then I spent a lot of time in India and Africa, especially the whole of East Africa, put on a lot of sort of, we started a school over there and did a lot of food. So I guess it was the same sort of thing there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think when you travel, I mean, my whole experience of life is from traveling. I never feel quite right when I go on holiday somewhere. It's more, I have to go and live there, if you know what I mean. I think a lot of people feel like that and understand the people. And I always feel just so lucky, blessed, whatever, when I get to go to a country and understand the culture and the people of that land. And I feel that's everything in life. You know, what do they say? Don't judge someone's, until you've walked in their shoes, whatever that saying is, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's kind of like, to understand people, you have to live a little bit the life that everyone else, you know, different lives. So yeah, living in all different countries, especially, well, India was good because I learned to cook there and I enjoyed India for a variety of reasons, but Africa was where my heart was for many, many years. Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Malawi. And, you know, I guess people, when I was there, I just loved the community and the compassion and everyone looked out for each other a lot more. It would be hard to be sitting alone the way I think a lot of people sit alone here. So maybe that inspired me. And I was part of a group when I traveled there. I've always had this thing that if you're not part of, some people are part of religions, some people are part of, you know, a group, maybe they've come from another country to live here and they're part of that group. Maybe it's because they work in certain jobs and they're social circles, whatever you call it. Mm. And I always feel there's a lot of people who aren't really part of any clique or group or anything like that. And they're the ones who also get quite isolated. So I think coming back from all of that, it really did inspire me to just, you know, do something that didn't link people by those things, just literally brought people together. I think traveling is our biggest school, our biggest teacher. I mean, I passionately feel like that. And I think also now we have, you know, social media as well allows people to travel in some ways further than they've ever traveled.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then in other ways, it doesn't. And also, you know, inequalities leads people to not only not travel, but not even leave maybe their estate or their town, which, you know, changes the shape of life. I went on a 2-week holiday in March before COVID, and I got trapped in Jamaica till the end of June.
Oh, interesting.
So I missed lockdown.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a different experience experiencing it there, so.
Yeah, you didn't miss a hell of a lot.
But linked to that, I also think when working in situations where maybe young people haven't had the opportunity to travel very much, you know, as they grow up, it is really important to, I don't know, do stuff that's a little bit, you know, we talked at the beginning, outside of the box, outside of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
And just bring in sort of opportunities. And talk about opportunities. We were talking about this yesterday. There's a viral, I don't know what you call it. There's in Harrow, they're going to do a challenge for charities to get the young people. We have to make like a 1-minute video of what we would do if we won £3,000. And I was chatting to a couple of the young people last night. And we were saying, well, maybe, you know, they're like, oh, what should we do? Just show how grotty the estate is. And I was like, no, let's, I think we should turn it around and say, you know, the one thing that everyone here, let's think of an experience that all the young people could do. If what would you do if you just had £3,000? What would you do with it? You know, go and climb Snowdon, go on a, you know, what kind of challenge could all of you do together? What could we do with it? You know, and you know, sometimes we forget that just living day to day, parents trying to feed their kids and get to work and figure out their housing. There's not much thought goes into the extraordinary and the adventurous stuff. And teenagers especially, they need that, I reckon. They need adventure.
Me and my partner have been to the Salford Lads Club a few times up in Salford. And she's a hardcore Smiths fan, so we originally went there just to see the exterior because, of course, for those who don't know that are listening, there's a big photograph on the inside of the Queen Is Dead album with them all standing outside Salford Lads Club. So anyway, we went there and we've been inside it a few times because they take you on tours. And they actually did run a fundraiser where they took a lot of the kids on a big trip around America.
Well, I met this lady, actually. She'd be a good one for you. She's okay. From Harrow, and she started a charity, I think back in the 80s or something. And since then, every single year, they take a group of disadvantaged and also disabled, real mixed group, on an adventure of a lifetime. And she's been to every country. I mean, I thought I travelled, but she's literally been to every country in the world. And the story she was telling me was just incredible. So I'll email you her thing. But it was just amazing, like what she's done. And she was sort of saying, you know, in the middle of, it was actually Peru or somewhere, with the wheelchair wheeling away or something. And it was like, it was just, you know, but yeah, she was... she had some stories to tell about the bonds that the young people created together on this trip of a life. You know, it's a real trip of a lifetime. So,
well, that sounds pretty cool. We'll have to. Yeah, thank you. I always appreciate any chance I can get to put people on this show. So, lastly, then, I suppose I'll just ask you that, as far as my yard's concerned, do you have any? I'm saying, from one non-planner to another, do you have any ultimate goals for what you're doing here?
Well, I think I'm really trying to settle into a really good model with the food. And I would love to see, the only thing, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I would love to see in the next year a kind of, I don't know, less waste kind of surplus community-based market once a week where people can access, in a really nice environment, nice foods, really, you know, good food for them regularly, and just have a really good model that works. That's something, you know, and just keep improving our allotments and spaces, having lots of activity down there, and just seeing what kind of random things come to the allotments and the community centre when it opens. Just lots more creativity and good food, but really sort of stake our position of being the one who offers choice and health, you know, healthy items, and in a really fair way. That would be my goal, as well as get on top of all my paperwork.
Rachel, thank you very much for being on All the Rage, and we totally support what My Yard is doing, solidarity. And you're welcome back on any time. I'd love to kind of check in with you maybe in a couple of months and see how it's going. So really, thanks for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.